Jackram marched off, his inflated chest as red as a robin's and twice as threatening. He shouted at orderlies, harried guards, saluted officers, and despite everything, hammered the blade of purpose out of the red-hot steel of panic. He was a sergeant major in a room full of confused Ruperts, and he was happier than a terrier in a barrel of rats. Stopping a battle is much harder than starting it. Starting it only requires you to shout, "Attack!" But when you want to stop it, everyone's busy. Polly could feel the news spreading. They're girls! The orderlies scuttling in and out once more kept staring at them, as if they were some kind of strange insects. I wonder how many Jackram missed, Polly thought. I wonder. Bits of uniform turned up. Jade found some pants that fitted by locating a clerk who was Polly's height, lifting him up and pulling them off him. A jacket was acquired. Lofty even stole a shako of the right size and polished the badge with her sleeve until it gleamed. Polly was just doing up the belt when she spotted a figure on the far side of the room. She'd completely forgotten about him. She pulled the belt tight and thrust the leather through the buckle as she walked and then strode through the crowds of figures. Strappy saw her coming, but it was too late. There was no escape, short of running, and captains didn't run from corporals. He stood his ground like a rabbit hypnotised by the approaching vixen and raised his hands as she approached. "Now then, Perks, I'm a captain and I had a job to do," he began. "And how long do you think you'll hold that rank now, sir?" hissed Polly, "if I tell the General about our little fight, and how you sicked the Prince onto us, and how you bullied Wazzer, and about my hair, you sticky, little, miserable apology for a man. Shufti's a better man than you, and she's pregnant." "Oh, we knew there were women getting in," said Strappy. "We just didn't know how far the rot went." "You took my hair because you thought it meant something to me," hissed Polly. "Well, you can keep it. I'll grow some more, and no one is going to stop me, understand? Oh, and one other thing. This is how far the rot goes." It was a blow rather than a slap, and it knocked him down so hard that he rolled. But he was Strappy, and staggered upright with a finger pointed for vengeance. "She struck a superior officer!" he screamed. A few heads turned. They looked at Strappy. They looked at Polly. Then they looked back, grinning at what they were doing. "I should run away again if I was you," said Polly. She turned on her heel, feeling the heat of his impotent fury. As she was about to rejoin Jade and Maledict, someone touched her arm. She spun round. "What? Oh! Sorry, Major Clogston," she said, relaxing. She felt she wouldn't be able to deal with Strappy again, not without committing murder. That would probably get her into trouble even now. "I should like to thank you for a most enjoyable day," said the Major. "I did my best, but I think we were all outclassed." "Thank you, sir," said Polly. "This was a pleasure, Corporal Perks," said Clogston. "I shall watch your future career with interest and envy. Congratulations. And since, in here, protocol seems to be flapping loose, I will shake you by the hand." They did so. "And now we have duties," said Major Clogston, as Jade arrived with a white sheet on a pole. "Oh, and by the way, my name is Christine. But, you know, I really don't think I could get used to wearing a dress again." Maledict and Jade were chosen to see Polly through the castle, a troll because a troll commands respect, and a vampire because a vampire demands it. There were groans and cheers as they elbowed their way along the passages, because news had already got around. That was another reason for taking Jade. Trolls could push. "Okay," said Jackram, bringing up the rear. "At the bottom of these steps there's a door, and beyond that door is enemy territory. Put the white flag out first. Important safety tip."
"Can't you come with us, Sarge?"
"Ha! Me? I dare say there's a few people out there who'd take a potshot at me, white flag or no. Don't you worry. The word's gone out."
"What word's that, Sarge?"
Jackram leaned closer. "They ain't gonna shoot a girl, Perks."
"You told them?"
"Let's just say that news gets around fast," said Jackram. "Grab the advantage, and I'll find your brother while you're gone, upon my oath. Oh, and one other thing. Look at me, Perks."
Polly turned in the crowded, jostling corridor. Jackram's eyes twinkled.
"I know I can trust you, Perks. Make the most of it, lad. Kissin' don't last."
Well, that couldn't be plainer, Polly thought, as the armed men by the door beckoned them forward. "Stick to the walls, okay, ladies, and be quick with that rag." The heavy door swung open.
Half a dozen arrows bounced and pinwheeled along the corridor. Another one tore through the flag. Polly waved it desperately. She heard distant shouting and then cheers.
"Go, go!"
said a guard, pushing her forward. She stepped out into the sudden daylight and, to make sure, waved the flag overhead a few more times. There were men in the courtyard and lining the battlements around it. There were bodies, too. A captain, with blood soaking through his jacket, stepped across the fallen and held out his hand.
"You may give that to me, soldier," he said.
"No, sir. I must deliver it to your commander and wait for his reply, sir."
"Then you give it to me, soldier, and I will bring you back the reply. You have surrendered after all."
Polly shook her head. "No, this is a truce. That's not the same thing. I have to hand this over personally, and you aren't big enough." A thought hit her. "I demand to take this to Commander Vimes." The captain stared at her, and then looked closer.
"Aren't you one of those?" he began.
"Yes," sighed Polly.
"And you locked them in chains and threw the key away?"
"Yes," said Polly, seeing her past life start to flash before her eyes.
"And they had to hop miles with shackles on and no clothes?"
"Yes."
"And you're just women?"
"Yes," said Polly, letting the just go for now.
The captain leaned closer and spoke while trying not to move his lips.
"Damn good show. Well done. About time some arrogant bastards here got taken down a peg."
He leaned back.
"Commander Vimes, it is then. Follow me, miss."
Polly felt hundreds of eyes on her as the squad was let into the inner keep. There were one or two wolf whistles, because there were more soldiers in there, including quite a few trolls. Jade bent down, snatched up a rock and hurled it at one of them, hitting him between the eyes.
"No one move!" shouted Maledict,
waving his hands urgently as 100 men raised their weapons.
"That was a troll version of blowing a kiss!"
And, indeed, the troll who had been hit was waving at Jade, a little unsteadily.
"Can we knock it off with the lovey-dovey, please?" said Polly to Jade as the bows were lowered. "The soft people are likely to get the wrong idea."
"It's stopped the whistling, though,"
Maledict observed. More people watched them as they climbed flight after flight of stone steps. No one could take this place, Polly could see that. Every flight was seen by another one higher up. Every visitor would be sighted on before she'd even glimpsed a face. A figure stepped out of the shadows as they reached the next floor. It was a young woman, in old-fashioned leather and mail armour, with a breastplate. She had long, very fair hair. For the first time in weeks, Polly felt a twinge of envy.
"Thank you, Captain. I'll take over from here," she said, and nodded to Polly. "Good evening, Corporal Perks, if you would follow me, please."
"She's a woman and a sergeant,"
Maledict whispered, as Angua led them down a wide corridor.
"Yes, I know," said Polly.
"But she gave an order to that captain."
"Maybe she's apolitical."
"And she's obviously female."
"I'm not blind, Mal," said Polly.
"I'm not deaf, either," said the woman, turning and smiling. "My name is Angua. If you will wait here, I'll have some coffee sent in. There's a bit of an argument going on in there at the moment."
They were in a sort of anteroom, not much more than a widened area of the corridor, with a few benches. There were big double doors at the far end, behind which voices were being raised. Angua left.
"Just like that," said Maledict. "What's to stop us taking over the place?"
"All those men with crossbows we passed on the way up?" said Polly. "Why us?" she thought, looking blankly at the wall.
"Oh yes, those, yes,"
said Maledict.
Paul?"
"Yes?"
"I'm actually Maledicta." She sat back. "There, I've told someone."
"That's nice,"
said Jade.
"Oh, good," said Polly. "I'd be going out to give the latrines their afternoon swill about now," she thought. "This has got to be better than that, right?"
"I thought I did pretty well," Maledicta went on. "Now, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking vampires have a pretty good time of it, whatever sex they are, right? But it's the same everywhere. Velvet dresses, underwired nightgowns, acting crazy all the time, and don't let's even go near the whole bathing in virgin's blood thing. You get taken a lot more seriously if they think you're male."
"Right," said Polly. "All in all, it's been a long day. A bath would be nice."
"I thought I did pretty well right up until the whole coffee thing," A necklace of the roast beans, that'd be the thing. I'll be better prepared another time.
Yeah, said Polly, good idea. With real soap.
Soap? How would soap work?
What? Oh, sorry, said Polly.
Did you hear anything I said? Said Maledicta, looking pained.
Oh, that, yes, thank you for telling me.
Is that it?
Yes, said Polly. You're you, that's good. I'm me, whoever I am. Tonker's Tonker. It's all just people. Look, a week ago the high spot of my day was reading the new graffiti in the men's latrines. I think you'll agree that a lot has happened since then. I don't think I'm going to be surprised at anything any more. The coffee bean necklace sounds good, by the way. She drummed her feet on the floor impatiently. Right now, I just wish they'd hurry up in there.
They sat and listened, and then Polly became aware of a little column of smoke coming from behind a bench on the other side of the space. She walked over and peered over the back. A man was lying there, head on one arm, smoking a cigar. He nodded when he saw Polly's face.
They're gonna be ages yet, he said.
Aren't you that sergeant I saw in the old kitchen, making faces behind Lord Rustramank Morpork?
I was not making faces, Corporal, said the man, sitting up. That's how I always look when Lord Rusty's talking. And I was a sergeant once, it's true, but look, no stripes.
Make the faces once too often, said Jade.
The man laughed. He hadn't shaved today, by the look of it.
Something like that, yes. Come along to my office, it's warmer. I only came out here because people complain about the smoke. Don't worry about that lot in there, they can wait. I'm only down a passage.
They followed him. The door was, indeed, only a few steps away. The man pushed it open, walked across the little room beyond, and sat down in a chair. The table in front of it overflowed with papers.
I think we can get enough food up here to see you through the winter, he said, picking up a sheet of paper, apparently at random. Grain's a bit short, but we've got a handy surplus of white drumhead cabbage, keeps wonderfully, full of vitamins and minerals, but you might want to keep your windows open if you follow me. Don't stare. I know the country's a month away from starvation.
But I haven't even shown this letter to anyone, Polly protested. You don't know what we...
I don't have to, said the man. This is about food and mouths. Good grief, we don't have to fight you. Your country is going to fall over anyway. Your fields are overgrown. Most of your farmers are old men. The bulk of the grub goes to the army. And armies don't do much for agriculture except marginally raise the fertility of the battlefield. The honour, the pride, the glory, none of that matters. This war stops, or Borogravia dies. Do you understand?
Polly remembered the gale-swept fields, the old people salvaging what they could.
We're just messengers, she said. I can't negotiate.
You know your god's dead, said the man. Nothing left but a voice, according to some of our priests. The last three abominations were against rocks, ears, and accordion players. Okay, I might be with him on the last one, but rocks? Ha! We can advise you if you're going to look for a new one, by the way. Om's very popular at the moment. Very few abominations, no special clothing, and hymns you can sing in the bath. You won't get Offler the crocodile god up here with your winters, and the unorthodox potato church is probably a bit too uncomplicated for...
Polly started to laugh. Look, sir, I'm just a... What is your name, please?
Sam Vimes. Special envoy, which is kind of like an ambassador but without the little gold chocolates.
Vimes the Butcher, said Maledicta.
Oh, yes, I've heard that one, said Vimes, grinning. Your people haven't really mastered the fine art of propaganda, and I'm telling you because... Well, have you heard of Om? They shook their heads. No? Well, in the old Book of Om, there's a story about some city full of wickedness, and Om decided to destroy it with holy fire, this being back in the old smiting days before he'd got religion. But Bishop Horn protested this plan, and Om said he'd spare the city if the bishop could find one good man. Well, the bishop knocked on every door and turned up empty-handed. It turned out, after the place had been reduced to a big puddle of glass, that there were probably plenty of good people there, and, being good, they weren't the sort to admit it. Death by modesty. Terrible thing. And you, ladies, are the only Borogravians I know much about, apart from the military, who, frankly, aren't chatty. You don't appear to be as insane as your country's foreign policy. You're the one piece of international goodwill it has. A bunch of young boys outwitting crack cavalrymen, kicking the prince in the fork. People at home like that. And now it turns out you're girls. They'll love that.
Mr. De Word is going to have fun with that when he finds out, and I'll see he does.
But we don't have any power. We can't negotiate a...
What does Borogravia want?
Not the country. I mean the people.
Polly opened her mouth to reply, and then shut it again and thought about the answer.
To be left alone, she said, by everybody. For a while, anyway. We can change things.
You'll accept the food.
We are a proud country.
What are you proud of?
It came swiftly, like a blow, and Polly realised how wars happened. You took that shock that had run through her and let it boil. It may be corrupt, benighted and stupid, but it's ours.
Vimes was watching her face.
From this desk here, he said, the only thing your country has to be proud of right now is you women.
Polly stayed silent. She was still trying to cope with the anger. It made it worse to know that he was right. We have our pride, and that's what we're proud of. We're proud of being proud.
Very well, then. Will you buy some food? Said Vimes, watching her carefully. On credit. I suppose you still have someone in your country who knows about the kind of international affairs that don't involve edged weapons?
People would accept that, yes, said Polly hoarsely.
Good. I'll send a clax back tonight.
And why would you be so generous, Mr. Ankh-Morpork?
Because I'm from a wonderfully warm-hearted city, Corporal.
No, I can't say that and keep a straight face, said Vimes.
Do you want to know the truth? Most people in Ankh-Morpork hadn't even heard of your country until the clax went down. There's dozens of little countries around here selling one another hand-painted clogs or beer made from turnips. Then they knew you as the bloody mad idiots who fight everyone. Now they know you as, well, people who do just what they do. And tomorrow they'll laugh. And there are other people, people who sit and think about the future every day, who believe it's worth a little to be friends with a country like that.
Why? Said Maledicta suspiciously.
Because Ankh-Morpork is a friend to all freedom-loving people everywhere, said Vimes.
Ha! Gods, it must be the way I tell them.
Ze ji borogrisha proshtvik.
He saw their blank expressions.
Sorry, I've been away from home too long, and frankly, I'd rather be back there.
But why did you say you were a cherry pancake? Said Polly.
Didn't I say I'm a citizen to Borogravia?
No.
Brogosha is the cherry pancake. Borogvia is the country.
Well, I made the effort at least.
Look, we'd rather Prince Heinrich wasn't ruler of two countries. That'd make one quite big country, much bigger than the other ones round here. So it'd probably get bigger still. He wants to be like Ankh-Morpork, you see. But what he means is he wants power and influence. He doesn't want to earn them. He doesn't want to grow into them or learn the hard way how to use them. He just wants them.
Well, that's playing politics, said Maledicta.
No, it's just telling the truth. Make peace with him by all means. Just leave the road and the towers alone. You'll get the food anyway at whatever price. Mr. De Word's article will see to that.
You sent the coffee, said Polly.
Oh, yeah, that was Corporal Buggy Swires, my eye in the sky. He's a gnome.
And you set a werewolf on us?
Well, set is a bit strong. Angua followed you just to be on the safe side. She's a werewolf, yes.
The girl we met, she didn't look like one.
Well, they don't, usually, said Vimes. Right up until the moment when they do, if you see what I mean. And she was following you because I was looking for anything that had stopped thousands of people dying, that's why. And that's not politics either, said Vimes.
He stood up.
And now, ladies, I have to go and present your document to the Alliance leaders.
You came out for a smoke at the right time, didn't you? Said Polly, slowly and carefully. You knew we were on our way, and you made sure you'd get to us first.
Of course. I can't leave this to a bunch of... Oh, yeah, Ruperts.
Where is my brother, Mr. Vimes? Said Polly, stiffly.
You seem very sure I know, said Vimes, not looking her in the face.
I'm certain you do, said Polly.
Why?
Because no one else does.
Vimes stubbed out his cigar. Angua was right about you, he said. Yeah, I arranged for him to be put in what I like to call protective custody. He's fine. Angua will take you to him now, if you like. Your brother,
Possibility of revenge, blackmail, who knows what. I thought he might be safer if I know exactly who holds the keys.
The end of the journey, Polly thought. But it wasn't. Not any more. She got the distinct impression that the man opposite was reading her thoughts.
"That's what all this was about, wasn't it?" he said.
"No, sir. It's just how it started," said Polly.
"Well, it continues like this," said Vimes. "This is going to be a busy day. Right now I shall take this offer of a truce in the room down the passage and present it to the very important men," his voice went flat to say those words, "who are discussing what to do about Borogravia. You'll get a truce, the food, and probably some other help."
"How do you know that?" said Polly. "They haven't discussed it."
"Not yet. But, as I told you, I used to be a sergeant. Angua."
The door opened. Angua came in. As Vimes had said, you couldn't tell who was a werewolf until you found out.
"And now I'd better have a shave before I go to see the very important men," said Vimes. "People set a lot of store by shaving."
Polly felt embarrassed walking down the steps with Sergeant Angua. "How did you start a conversation? So, you're a werewolf, then?" would be sort of idiotic. She was glad that Jade and Maledicta had been left in the waiting room.
"Yes, I am," said Angua. "But I didn't say it," Polly burst out. "No, but I'm used to situations like this. I've learned to recognise the way people don't say things. Don't worry."
"You followed us," said Polly.
"Yes. So you must have known we weren't men."
"Oh, yes," said Angua. "My sense of smell is much better than my eyesight, and I've got sharp eyes. Humans are smelly creatures. For what it's worth, though, I wouldn't have told Mr. Vimes if I hadn't heard you talking to one another. Anyone could have heard you. You don't need to be a werewolf for that. Everyone's got secrets they don't want known. Werewolves are a bit like vampires in that way. We're tolerated if we're careful."
"That I can understand," said Polly.
"So are we," she thought.
Angua stopped by a heavy, studded door. "He's in here," she said, producing a key and turning it in the lock. "I'll go back and chat with the others. Come and find me when you're ready."
Polly stepped inside, heart pounding, and there was Paul. And there was a buzzard on a perch by the open window. And on the wall, where Paul was working so intensely that his tongue was sticking out of the corner of his mouth and he hadn't even noticed the door opening, was another buzzard, flying in the heart of the sunrise. Right now, Polly could forgive Ankh-Morpork anything. Someone had found Paul a box of coloured chalks. What was a long day began to get longer. She had a kind of power. They all did. People gave them space, watched them. The fighting had stopped, and they were the cause, and no one knew exactly why. There were lighter moments. They might have power, but General Frock gave the orders. And General Frock might give the orders, but it was permissible to suppose that it was Sergeant Major Jackram who anticipated them. And perhaps that was why Shufti asked Polly and Tonka to go with her, and they were ushered into a room where a couple of guards stood on either side of a sheepish young man called Johnny, who had fair hair and blue eyes and a gold earring and his pants around his knees in case Shufti wanted to check his other distinguishing feature. He also had a black eye.
"Is this the one?" said Major Clogston, who was leaning against the wall, eating an apple. "The General has asked me to tell you that there will be a dowry of 500 crowns with the army's compliments."
Johnny brightened up slightly when he heard that.
Shufti gave him a long and careful look.
"No,"
she said at last, turning away.
"That's not him."
Johnny opened his mouth, and Polly snapped, "No one asked you to speak private." And such was the nature of the day that he shut up.
"Oh, dear. I'm afraid he's the only candidate," said Clogston. "We've got any amount of earrings, heads of fair hair, blue eyes, Johnnies, and, surprisingly, a fair number of carbuncles. But he's the only one with everything. Are you sure?"
"Positive," said Shufti, still staring at the boy. "My Johnny must have been killed."
Clogston walked over and lowered her voice.
"In that case, sir, the General did say, informally, that a marriage certificate, a ring, and a widow's pension could be arranged," she said.
"Can she do that?" whispered Polly.
"For one of you, today?" "You'll be amazed at what can be done," said Clogston. "Don't think too badly of her. She means well. She's a very practical man."
"No," said Shufti. "It's Well, no. Thank you, but no.
Are you sure? Said Polly.
Positive, said Shufti, looking defiant. Since she was not naturally a defying kind of person, it was not quite the look that she thought it was, and ought to have been, having overtones of hemorrhoid sufferer. But the effort was there.
Clogston stepped back.
Well, if you're certain, Private, fair enough, then. Take that man away, Sergeant.
Just a moment, said Shufti.
She walked over to the bewildered Johnny, stood in front of him, held out her hand, and said,
Before they take you away again, I want my sixpence back, you son of a bitch.
Polly held out her hand to Clogston, who shook it and smiled. There had been another little victory of sorts. If the landslide is big enough, even square pebbles will roll. Polly headed back to the rather larger cell that had been made available as the women's barracks, or at least the barracks for the official women. Men, grown men, had fallen over themselves to put cushions in there and bring in wood for the fire. It was all very strange. Polly felt they were being treated as something dangerous and fragile, like, say, a huge and wonderful jar full of poison. She turned the corner into the big courtyard, and there was de Word with Mr. Sheik. There was no escaping them. There were definitely people looking for someone. The man was dragging out his notebook even as he came toward her, and gave her a look in which reproach was mingled with hope.
So you're women, then? He said.
"Yes," said Polly. That seemed to cover it.
"But you didn't tell me when we met before," said de Word, as if there was some dereliction of manners.
"Sorry, but we didn't tell you we were men, either."
De Word, a man who wrote things down, found a nice new page in his book.
"This is an amazing story," he said. "You really fought your way here and got in disguised as washerwomen?"
"Well, we were women, and we did do some washing," said Polly. "I suppose it was quite a cunning disguise, really.
We got in by not being disguised, you could say."
"General Frock and Captain Blouse say they're very proud of you," de Word went on, scribbling.
"Oh, he has got promoted, then," said Polly.
"Yes, and Frock said you did wonderfully well for women."
"Yes, I suppose we did," said Polly.
"Yes, very well, for women."
"The General went on to say," de Word consulted his notebook, "that you are a credit to the women of your country. I wonder if you'd care to comment."
He looked innocent, so possibly he didn't understand the raging argument that had just broken out in Polly's head.
"A credit to the women of your country. We're proud of you." Somehow those words locked you away, put you in your place, patted you on the head and dismissed you with a sweetie. On the other hand, you had to start somewhere.
"That's very nice of them," said Polly, "but we just want to get the job done and go home. That's what soldiers want."
She thought for a moment and then added, "And hot sweet tea."
To her amazement, he wrote this down too. "Just one last question, miss. Do you think the world would be a different place if more women were soldiers?" de Word asked.
He was smiling again, she noted, so this was probably a jokey kind of question.
"Oh, I think you'd have to ask General Frock that," said Polly.
"And I'd like to watch her expression if you do."
"Yes, but what do you think, miss?"
"That's Corporal, please."
"Sorry, Corporal."
"And?"
The pencil was hovering. Around it, the world turned. It wrote things down, and then they got everywhere. The pen might not be mightier than the sword, but maybe the printing press was heavier than the siege weapon. Just a few words can change everything.
"Well," said Polly, "I..."
There was a sudden bustling around the gates at the other end of the courtyard, and some cavalry officers arrived. They must have been expected, because Slovenian officers were converging in a great hurry.
"Ah, I see the prince is back," said de Word. "He's probably not going to be happy about the truce. They sent some gallopers out to meet him."
"Can he do anything about it?"
de Word shrugged.
"He left some very senior officers here. It would be rather shocking if he did."
The tall figure had dismounted and was striding toward Polly, or rather, she realized, the big doorway next to her. Frantic clerks and officers trailed after him and were brushed off. But when a white oblong was waved in front of his face by one man, he grabbed it and stopped so quickly that several other officers bumped into him.
Said de Word. "The edition with the cartoon, I expect."
The paper was thrown down.
"Yes, probably that was it," de Werd went on. Heinrich advanced. Now Polly could make out his expression. It was thunderous. Beside her, de Werd turned over to a fresh page in his notebook and cleared his throat. "You're going to talk to him," said Polly. "In that mood, he'll cut you down." "I have to," said de Werd. And, as the prince and his retinue reached the doorway, he took a step forward and said, in a voice that cracked slightly, "Your Highness, I wonder if I could have a word." Heinrich turned to scowl at him and saw Polly. For a moment their gazes locked. The prince's adjutants knew their master. As the man's hand flew to his sword, they closed on him in a mob, completely surrounding him, and there was some frantic whispering, in which some rather louder injections from Heinrich on the broad theme of "What?" could be heard, followed by a toccata on "The hell you say?" and a riff in the key of "What? Seriously?" The crowd parted again. The prince slowly and carefully brushed some dust off his spotless jacket, glanced only briefly at Otto and de Werd, and, to Polly's horror, strolled toward her, suddenly all shiny smiles, and with one white-gloved hand extended. "Oh, no," she thought, "but he's cleverer than Vimes thinks he is, and he can control his temper, and suddenly I'm everyone's mascot."
"For the good of our great countries," said Heinrich, "it is suggested that we publicly shake the hand of friendship."
He smiled again, or at least allowed the corners of his mouth to turn up. Because she could think of no other way out, Polly took the huge hand and obediently shook it.
"Oh, very good," said Otto, grasping his picture box. "I can only take the one, of course, because unfortunately I shall have to use flash. Just one moment."
Polly was learning that an art form that happens in a fraction of a second nevertheless needs a long time to take place, allowing a smile to freeze into a mad grimace, or, in the worst cases, a death rictus. Otto muttered to himself as he adjusted the equipment. Heinrich and Polly maintained the grip and stared at the picture box.
"So," muttered the prince out of the corner of his mouth, "the soldier boy isn't a soldier boy. That is your good luck."
Polly kept her fixed grin.
"Do you often menace frightened women?" she said.
"Oh, that was nothing. You are only a peasant girl after all. What do you know of life? And you showed spirit."
"Everyone say cheese," Otto commanded. "One, two, three. Oh, bug!"
By the time the after images had died away, Otto was back on his feet again.
"One day I really hope to find a filter that works," he muttered. "Thank you, everyone, nevertheless."
"That was for peace and goodwill between nations," said Polly, smiling sweetly and letting go of the prince's hand. She took a step backwards. "And this, Your Highness, is for me." Actually, she didn't kick. Life was a process of finding out how far you could go too far, and you could probably go too far in finding out how far you could go. But a mere twitch of a leg was enough. Just to see the idiot collapse in the ridiculous, knock-kneed, protective crouch that is as instinctive to a man as saving half an onion is to a woman. She marched away, singing inside. This was not a fairy-tale castle, and there was no such thing as a fairy-tale ending. But sometimes you could threaten to kick the handsome prince in the ham and eggs. And now there was one other little thing.